Hello and welcome, friends, to a special Earth Day edition of Sustainability Now here on Forward Radio. We're your community radio station, radio for the people, by the people. We broadcast to you 24/7 from high atop the historic Hebron Building here in downtown Louisville at 106.5 FM, but you can listen anywhere you are. Maybe you're headed out of town this time of year. That's great. You can take us with you at forwardradio.org, and you can also go there to support our station. We just had a wonderful pledge drive celebrating 7 years on the air and a wonderful birthday party. Thanks to everybody who participated in that and came out to wish us well. But if you didn't get a chance to donate, we're always relying on listener support. So you could maybe chip in the $20 that makes today's 24-hour broadcast possible at forwardradio.org. And then also think about getting involved in the station. This is volunteer-powered as well. So maybe you've got something you want to get behind the microphones about. We'd love to have you either for a one-time thing or a weekly program like this. We also need help behind the scenes, so go to forwardradio.org, click participate today. Well, what we do on Sustainability Now each week is bring in fun folks from around the community to learn about their perspectives on sustainability and what they're doing to get involved in sustainability. And sometimes around this time of year, we get the pleasure of sitting down with a candidate for elected office. And I'm really excited to be in conversation today with a candidate for Metro Council District 6. JP Lininger is in the studio with me. Did I pronounce it correctly? I should have asked that to start with.
So my own family disagrees. I say Lininger. My sister says Lininger. But, you know, either way, JP's fine.
JP is here in the studio with me. I'm so glad you're here. This is going to be really fun. The Democratic primary that you're running in is coming up. It's less than a month away now. Oh, my gosh. It's coming up on Tuesday, May 21st. We hope all of our listeners are registered. Just want to remind folks that they can always go to govote.ky.gov. to get registered for the general election coming up in November, but also to check out a sample ballot and see who is on the ticket in your neighborhood. If, like me, you live in District 6, you're going to see three candidates for the Louisville Metro Council seat for District 6. The incumbent is Phil Baker. Also running is Katie Dittmeyer-Holm, and then J.P. Lininger is here as well. So those are your choices, and our role here at Forward Radio is not to endorse any particular candidate or piece of legislation. We're not here to promote J.P. or anyone else. We are here to give you all access to the candidates to get a better understanding of where they are. We endorse an educated democracy. That's what it's all about. So I'm really excited to be in conversation with J.P. today. JP, have you ever held office before? Is this a new thing for you?
I have never run for public office
before. Okay.
I've been involved with political campaign works. I was the campaign manager for Robert Lavertis Bell when he ran
yes.
for state representative.
Former guest on this program, yes.
and I was also his treasurer when he ran for Metro Council.
Yeah.
And doing that really changed my life.
Wow.
Because I met so many people while I was canvassing for Robert who were completely abandoned,
you
know, their needs aren't met, their voices aren't heard, and they were ready for, you know, a different world, a better world.
Yeah.
And that really changed my life to see how many people were like, yeah, we not only need something more, something better, but I want to fight for it.
Yeah.
I also was the campaign manager for Kentucky Access for All, the No On Two campaign.
Nice, yeah.
We worked with Protect Kentucky Access, which was the ACLU-led campaign. We were on their coordinating calls. We looked at our purpose in the race was to reach out to people, regardless of party ID, throughout the state, and explain to them that, you know, it was the working class who suffers from abortion bans, like the one that was proposed in Amendment 2. We still live under the ban from the trigger law after the Dobbs decision, but at least we prevented the worst of the worst from happening and us getting that constitutional amendment in Kentucky that really would have made it very, very difficult to ever remove from our state's constitutional language.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we sent 3 million texts over the course of that campaign. You know, like I said, that was regardless of whether they were Republicans or Democrats. The first day that we sent out texts to Republicans, I did have to get the campaign team together. And we said, volunteers aren't going to read these replies. Some of them were pretty negative.
Kind of.
but 20% of those Republican replies said, you're right.
Wow.
This is too far. This is the dog that caught the car. I don't want this.
Yeah, that's how a lot of them feel. Yeah, exactly. So, wow. So you participated in these campaigns and you were not deterred for the amount of work and exhaustion. I know you admitted to me earlier, you're busier than you've ever been, right? Like, honestly, even just running for office, I think, is public service. So I want to honor you first for even considering it, because I know it's a challenge. But then certainly if you get elected and have to serve as well, whew, it's a lot.
It is.
So tell me some of the things that have motivated you to pursue candidacy in the first place.
So like I said, talking to people, I love canvassing.
Yeah,
I do a lot of canvassing.
Yeah.
Even before I was a candidate, I loved to canvass. It's even better as the candidate because people feel like they need to talk to you, that they need to understand why you're doing this, what do you believe in? And that excites me so much. Yeah. It fills me with a lot of energy. Yeah. I'm a pretty outgoing person anyway.
Yeah.
But this is truly, you know, I tell people all the time, I'm fortunate. I get to go out and do the thing I like best in the world every day. Go
awesome.
Out and talk to people about how we can have a better world. We can have better things. This is how we do it.
That's so great. Yeah. And I'm sure you're hearing lots of moving stories as you talk to people in the district. Maybe we should have started out with this. Where is District 6? If listeners aren't familiar with what district they're in, how would they even know if they're in District 6? So what neighborhood? And I know it's changed a lot, quite a bit. So I used to be in District 4. Now, anyway, what are the neighborhoods basically that are in District 6 and which one do you live in?
So there's Park Hill, Algonquin, Old Louisville, Shelby Park, Germantown, Paris Town Point. And that's actually geographically the smallest Metro Council district because it's so dense.
It's the more dense part of the city, yeah.
The densest part of the city for population.
But probably the most diverse demographics you're going to find anywhere.
In my opinion, probably the most diverse in the districts of the city. I live in Old Louisville. In fact, all of the candidates running live in Old Louisville.
Okay.
Phil and I live on the same block of 4th Street. Kate Dittmeyer-Holm lives on 6th Street. And in fact, in my old house, my children were born in her house. It's a Louisville is the smallest city in the world in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And I have met Kate, too. I'm going to reach out to her, try to get her on this program as well. The other piece of context is that Phil Baker filled a vacancy, right? Like, how did he come into office?
He was appointed to the seat by the Metro Council under the old rules when David James went into the mayor's administration following Greenberg's election. Phil, who had worked in David James' office on a part-time basis, selected to replace him. And then confirmed in the special election last November. That's actually something that comes up on the doors because people say, well, didn't we just have this election?
Just vote for this guy?
Right.
But this is the first time it's open to everybody, and you threw your hat in the ring. I mean, another important thing to point out, a lot of people don't vote in primaries at all because all they're thinking about is the national level politics. We're just fed this story every day that, well, it's already wrapped up for the presidential candidates, right? But that's not what this is really about. There is not only a race for Metro Council on your Democratic ballot and Republican too, but for a U.S. Representative Congress as well. So even if you are not motivated at all about the presidential race, please do vote on May 21st. It's really important that we get a large turnout so that all voices are represented. And it's, you know, your vote really matters extra in a primary because so few people do vote. So have you run into some of that when you're talking with constituents here about the election? Are they kind of like, well, I wasn't planning to vote?
You know, you know, we do talk to a lot of people who are, you know, kind of cynical,
exactly.
You know, disengaged from the process.
Yeah.
I tell people I completely understand that.
I know.
You know, a lot of our lives are set up to discourage active participation.
Yeah.
People tell me all the time when I'm out talking to people about, you know, let's get out and vote. Let's, you know, do these things to help us, you know, build movement to change the city. You know, people say, oh, they're going to do what they're going to do anyway. You know, it doesn't matter what we vote for.
Oh, man.
And, you know, I hate that feeling that people have,
yeah.
but I 100% understand how they got there.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, that is a self-fulfilling prophecy to a certain extent, right? The other interesting thing that's going on here is this is going to be probably the last partisan elections for Metro Council, right? Given that the state of Kentucky has just mandated that Metro Council elections here in Louisville be nonpartisan, right? How do you feel about that?
I think it's really unfortunate every time Frankfurt steps in and interferes with Louisville's self-governance.
Oh,
I don't think this is the end of that story. I think it's going to keep happening.
Right.
I did see it was Pamela Stevenson said recently that Greg Greenberg had a lot to do with it.
Oh, interesting.
Then Phil Bailey had a tweet thread talking about, because someone asked, well, why would Craig Greenberg want this to become nonpartisan elections? And he laid out a pretty compelling case for why he believes that probably was true, that Pamela Stevenson wasn't lying. And I'm sure she wasn't. I don't see why she would.
Yeah. Interesting. The other thing when it comes to partisan elections that I wanted to ask you about is, I believe you identify as a democratic socialist, as Robert Bell did. So I wonder how you feel about, you know, a two-party system where people who maybe don't, I'm not exactly a Democrat, I'm a democratic socialist. Like, how do you feel about that? And why do you identify that way?
Well, I'm a democratic socialist because I am a democratic socialist. You know, when I go out and canvass people, and you know, we've dropped lit at your door. You haven't been home when we tried to canvass.
I'm sorry. Yes.
But you know, the literature that we're handing out has a huge piece of our platform on it, as much as we can possibly fit.
It's good. Yeah.
On a push card.
Yeah.
And we do that because I really believe it is important that voters know what our, you know, we're frank and we're honest. These are my politics. These are my detailed policy positions that I want to, you know, enact when I'm in office, what I'm going to fight for. Mm-hmm. And I think that for two reasons. One, like you said, a educated electorate is so vital for democracy. People really should understand, you know, this is the civic process. These are the things we have. These are the things we don't. Why don't we have them? All of these things. I'm doing political education when I'm on the doors.
Yeah.
But two, because I want to build movement. And I can't build movement without explaining this is exactly what we're going to be fighting for. I can't get that buy-in if we're, you know, not talking to people about this is what we're going to be fighting for.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm a socialist because I really believe that we lack a lot of democratic control in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that the only way we're going to get to a world that's built for the many, not the few, is through socialism. You know, and it's not 1985 anymore. I don't think that there's really a reason for me to hide about my political beliefs. You know, that has never been, and again, I do a lot of canvassing. It has never been an issue on the doors.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah, if you listen to the mainstream media, which you're not listening to here on Forward Radio, all you hear is that there's, you know, fear about, you know, communists or socialists. And certainly there's a lot of attempt by the right to smear that term. But could you speak to a little bit more about what it means to you, what that vision looks like, especially here in Louisville? What's a socialist vision for Louisville?
So a socialist vision for Louisville starts with a reorientation of our budget.
Mm.
Right now, 40% of our budget is LMPD and corrections combined.
Oh, God, yeah.
That's double what we used to spend on policing before we merged the city and the county 20 years ago.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay. And so we did that because people are concerned about crime, and you know, people that run for office always want to look tough on crime. And
yeah.
So every year, as a percentage of our budget, LMPD and corrections piece of the pie climbed. All right. And so where is the upper limit on that? I don't know, but I would like it to be here. And in fact, we need to spend less on policing, because what we gave up when we said a blank check with no accountability, because our FOP contract is negotiated in secret, lawsuits do not come out of LMPD's budget. They come out of the general fund. You and I pay for it.
Wow.
So those lawsuits, the LMPD doesn't feel the pain, so they don't correct their behaviors.
Sure.
And so that blank check with no accountability, we said, buy whatever you want, buy the Bearcat, buy the armor, march down Broadway, just make us safe. And it didn't work.
No.
Because we gave up community centers, after school and summer programs for kids, jobs programs for teenagers, swimming pools in the summer, things families relied on to give kids somewhere safe they could be, where they had positive influences in their lives, they could play ball or work on homework after school, somewhere they could be. Kids aren't even allowed to go to the mall anymore. And so we send kids out for conservatively a third of their time and say, the streets are all you've got, you know, especially in areas where they don't have infrastructure and their parents don't have means to be putting them in a million extracurricular activities. And so we're surprised when the results are kids were raised by the streets. We don't have a safe Louisville because we haven't built the infrastructure for safe communities.
Yeah.
We have not, you know, we need to rebuild our neighborhoods. It's a 10-year solution. But we should have started 10 years ago.
Mm.
It is a, you know, it's a huge crisis in our city. The violent crime that we have, you know, the gun violence in our city's touched my family.
Yeah.
I had a cousin who was shot in Chickasaw Park last year in that mass shooting.
Wow, yes.
And so that's where it starts. 40% of our budget on LMPD and corrections combined is way, way too much.
Wow.
And we need to like be reinvesting in basic things that our community needs.
Yeah.
Beyond that, we just gave $114 million away to Jefferson Development Group to build luxury high-rise condominiums by Cherokee Park. They don't need help selling real estate by Cherokee right. Park. The people's money should be spent on the people's needs. Mm-hmm. That's what I want to do. I want to build the people power so they have to listen to the people, not the people who write $2,000 checks every 2 years.
My guest today here on Sustainability Now is running for Metro Council on District 6 on the Democratic ticket. His name is J.P. Lininger. Pronounce it however you want. You can learn more about him at jporlouisville.com. The primary election is coming up on Tuesday, May 21st. You can go to govote.ky.gov to see a sample ballot and learn more about it. So we spend too much on police and prisons, and then we treat the people in those in prisons horribly, not even getting great service out of all that money, right? So I've always felt like we need to decarcerate severely in this country and certainly locally as well. But people will often say we don't have the money to provide the services and the treatment that people in crisis who might be forced into committing crimes need. I think the argument I'm getting from you is that we already have all the money we need. I don't know. Do you think taxes need to be raised to provide more services, or we just need to stop funding the wrong things?
You know, we're in a tough spot here in Louisville. We have to be honest about that, that our ability to raise revenue is severely constrained by the state.
Mm-hmm.
I think we do need to try to, you know, organize against that, rebuild some power throughout the state
yeah.
and not just accept it as this is how it's going to be forever, that we live under, you know, reactionary rule from Frankfurt. But it's also, you know, it's what we do now is the fiscal irresponsibility.
Yeah.
We spend more because we're not spending correctly.
Mm.
If we would spend on the front end to prevent crime, it is extremely expensive
yep.
to house people in jail.
Yep.
It is a drag
yep.
on society. It is harmful to families. The effects multiply outward at an unbelievable rate.
Right.
At how we harm community when we take people off the streets, out and out of the you know, out of the community, and we certainly don't rehabilitate them, like you said. You know, we have huge problems with that, and these attitudes about spending are actually creating more and more problems, creating more and more spending problems. You know, I do think that we have a significant amount in our budget that we could be putting forward now
yeah.
to solve some problems, but I think it also would save some money.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's the long-term vision for these sorts of things, is that we'll have a healthier society. We'll be able to spend more on things that are positive.
Mm.
You know, that's the vision.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's what I believe in.
So if we're spending 40% on policing and incarceration now, if you were to get onto Metro Council, what would you argue for? Do you have a percentage in mind of the budget, or how would you go about making this decision in the first place?
Well, I'm realistic.
Yeah.
You know, that first budget cycle, I'm going to get my butt kicked. No one's going to listen to me. But I am going to be up there talking
building
about
building movement, like you said.
Building movement yeah. and saying, this is too much. Where if, you know, we're about to spend more and more on policing. That FOP contract that just dropped, you know, there is no limit if from the FOP's perspective on how much we should spend on the police. Metro Council's role cannot be to enable that vision. And so, yeah, my first time through the budget cycle, I will just be waving my arms
okay.
in the air saying, stop, stop, yeah. at least stop increasing the spending.
Pump the brakes here a bit.
Yeah.
yeah. And then I'm not guessing you're for, you know, there's a whole defund the police. I'm guessing you see a role for some amount of policing and you are interested in police reform. What does that look like to you? What should policing look like in Louisville?
Well, it starts with reforming the FOP contract process.
Okay.
Right now, like I said, FOP contract negotiated completely in secret. We just got last week on Friday was when they released the new contract with no memorandum of changes.
Oh,
so a 63-page document for citizens to go through, looking at it for the first time, trying to see what changed from the previous contract. One comment period on Monday that you had to so they dropped it on Thursday, sorry. And then there was a one comment period from yesterday that he had to sign up for on Friday by 4:00. to be heard. And then public safety is going to, you know, let's be realistic, they're going to sign off on it later this week. It's going to go before the Metro Council. They're going to pass it. And it's going to be done without significant community input. So it starts there.
Okay.
You know, we need changes in the FOP contract. Right now, the contract mandates there can never be a reduction in force.
Wow.
No layoffs. And so all you can do is do it by attrition.
Oh, my goodness.
And like I said, a very significant change that has to happen. And that's part of that, you know, no layoffs, nothing can ever be touched, it can never be reduced. Lawsuits have to hurt LMPD. Okay. They just have to.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, what incentive is there to change the behavior? If we're going to accept that lawsuits are a major way that we shape policy in this country because, you know, you've done a harm, there has to be a consequence, you feel that pain, you do better next time. Mm. Right now, LMPD feels no pain.
Mm-hmm.
We do as a city, but LMPD does not.
Yeah.
We've got to change that. That needs to be in the FOP contract.
Yeah.
We have to change the culture.
Yeah.
The culture in LMPD has problems. Let's be realistic. I don't think that's a surprise to the listeners here of this radio station. I don't think it's a surprise to anyone who's talked to me that I feel that way. We have a police that treats Louisville like an occupied, like they're in an occupied territory.
Yeah.
You know, they don't walk a beat. They don't get involved in the community. When there is a problem, if they show up, they show up 5 or 6 squad cars deep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they show up as a force,
right?
You know, and that's a culture problem. We just had this program of trying to incentivize with pretty serious money LMPD officers living in the communities they served.
And not a one.
Not one took part in that program.
Yeah, that is a red flag right there. That's pretty disturbing, right? Well, we could probably spend the whole time just talking about police, but I know that you are passionate about a lot of other issues, so I do want to touch on some of them. One of them tied to the affordable housing crisis, what you said about subsidizing the development near Cherokee Park brings to mind what's top of mind right now for me, which is the urban government center in my neighborhood, which is, some might think, oh, that's just a really hyper-local issue, but actually this is a huge, like, huge piece of public property that the city is disposing of and basically giving away to a developer. And so there is an issue before the Metro Council right now about do we allow another TIF to help fund this thing. What are your thoughts about the urban government center and this TIF issue?
So I'm going to start by talking about TIFs generally.
Okay, yeah.
You know, I'm sure you have a very informed listener base, but I'm going to, you know,
please.
Just 10,000 foot view of TIFs starting. It's a funding mechanism where, you know, the basic idea is you take future tax revenues from property taxes and you earmark them. You allocate them to specific purposes. For the most part, TIFs are about development and building. There's a long history of TIFs in Chicago. Ramson, a friend of mine, wrote extensively about the history of TIFs in Chicago and what sort of policy failures the TIFs led to, because what was very clear in the history of Chicago with TIFs is not only is this something that's, you know, Peter pays Paul, you know, robbing Peter to pay Paul, rather, and, you know, you're harming your future tax revenues, especially as it gets more and more expansive as you just accept this is our major funding mechanism for these projects, to the point that right now Brandon Johnson in Chicago is talking about having to issue billions in bonds because of the tax revenues that are already earmarked with TIFs.
Wow.
But they become developer slush funds,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you can kind of see how it works. You've got this giant pile of money that says, you know, there are a few rules for what developers qualify, maybe, or what projects it can be used for and things like that. But when the rubber meets the road, if there is not significant, powerful community oversight of the TIFs, then guess who gets those contracts?
Yeah.
Primarily people who have donated to political campaigns. They are they are reaping benefits tenfold of their donations at a minimum. Probably, you could, you know, if you really thought about the numbers, you could, you know, make your head spin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just mentioned $114 million for one block over on Cherokee, over by Cherokee Park. One block, $114 million to one developer for a for-profit project. Doesn't that make sense? And then, so like, but let's back up. Let's talk about the West End TIF.
Yeah.
Okay. So, no secret, I was on Robert Bell's campaign. Robert Bell fought against the TIF, talked about how the problems with the TIF, I understand that the West End TIF is supposed to be for redressing some of the harms of redlining, you know, economic development that was denied to the West End through, mm-hmm. you know, extremely racist policies.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, why, if this is about, you know, going back and, you know, do a do-over on past yeah. crimes.
Reparations.
Yeah. You know, a form of reparations. Yeah. You could just certainly view it that way. Why is that money coming from the West
from
End
the West
to
end.
Be spent in the West End? Why is that money coming from an East End TIF?
That feeds the West. Yeah.
Okay, so right there, I've got a big problem with it as a funding mechanism.
Right.
But like I said, you're ending up with, you know, Robin Peter to pay Paul becomes a slush fund for developers, political patronage rife through TIFs. Now let's talk about the Urban Government Center specifically. The Urban Government Center is a blight on your neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
It's a problem that has gone on
way too long.
You know,
7 years.
Multiple restarts of the process.
It's ridiculous.
I think that there's a big difference between spending $14 million or whatever the final number ends up being for the TIF versus $114 million for a new development that in a obviously not blighted area, because that's another thing with TIFs, is they're supposed to be a mechanism for economically disadvantaged areas, you know, and we got that ball rolling here in Louisville with the downtown arena.
Right.
I was actually an intern in Frankfurt when that was going through. I was in Larry Clark's office.
Oh.
I was a student at U of L. And the only member of the Louisville delegation that was against it was Jim Wayne. And I often refer to him as, you know, my experience, the only honest man in Frankfurt, because he spoke openly and frankly about this is a problem. This does not make sense. Why are we building this here? Who benefits? It's not the public.
Yeah.
And here we are. We have big problems with the TIF for the arena and the bonds. You know, we're not meeting those benchmarks,
mm-hmm.
and it's not all COVID, and it's not all U of L's performance mm-hmm. on the basketball court,
mm-hmm.
which is unfortunate. Let me say, very happy new hire as a pretty big U of L fan. But back to the Urban Government Center, my big problem, like you said, is this is public land, public money for profit.
Right.
I don't agree with that.
Yeah.
As you know, that's a basic problem I have with it. I could even live a little better with it if we're talking about affordable housing and senior center and, you know, medical care.
Which, gosh, was the plan with the second developer, and the city refused to give them a penny.
Right.
And now suddenly we're going to give $20 million to the guy who wants to build a boutique hotel, parking garage, office space in our urban core where there is so much vacant office space. It's insane.
Yeah. And so I really feel for the residents, though, in Paris Town
Point,
because it is a problem in their lives. And the government has refused to have a positive solution for nearly a decade. You know, it's rocking a hard place. It really is. But at the end of the day, public money, public land should be public use.
Yeah.
And that's a basic political orientation of mine.
Yeah. Moving beyond the Urban Government Center, what are some other thoughts you have around how we address the housing crisis?
So, like I said, we gave $114 million to Jefferson Development Group for luxury high-rise condominiums in the Highlands. We've got so many vacant homes in the West End.
Mm-hmm.
They are harming those neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm out canvassing in Algonquin and Park Hill, people talk, like, you ask them, you know, what's your number one issue? A lot of them say, these vacant homes on my block.
Absolutely.
You know, it's the same problem you've got in Paris Town Point.
Absolutely.
It's just smaller lots, but many of them, and they add up to this a bigger problem, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I really believe that a much better use of public funds would be if Louisville was buying those vacant homes,
ooh,
rehabbing them, putting families in them.
Yes.
The explosion of houselessness since COVID, primarily driven by families, as more people have fewer and fewer resources, less ability to help out friends and family.
Mm-hmm.
More and more families are falling through the cracks in our system,
mm-hmm.
you know, living out of cars. And we could be stabilizing those families, giving them a chance to turn their lives around. You know, I think that's a huge policy problem. The problem that we have in Louisville with how we treat the houseless was the issue that pushed me into this race.
Yeah.
I tell people this. You know, we had a town hall back in September in our district at the Women's Club on 4th Street. Councilman Baker and I, like I said, we know each other. Our kids go to school together. And so I was not planning to run then. And I walked into this town hall in front of Councilman Baker, and he said, "Hey, JP, are you planning to speak?" And I said, "I wasn't planning on it. I wanted to hear what you had to say." And he encouraged me to speak. And so I got up there on the mic, and I said, "We spend $8,000. These numbers are from the Courier-Journal. We spend $8,000 every time we clear a camp.
Yeah.
We do it dozens of times a month.
Yeah.
So that money adds up pretty quick. And it becomes a giant pile of money that we light on fire to accomplish nothing."
Right.
"Because they go place to place to place. Yeah. And then they're right back where they started. But in the meantime, we took everything they owned and we threw it in a dumpster."
Yeah. Yeah.
"And so we're making their lives demonstrably worse. We're making our lives worse, too. I live on 4th Street. Sometimes stuff gets stolen off my porch. People are calling about these camps because they're concerned about property crime."
Yeah.
"What do you think happens when you take everything, everything someone owns, their tent, their sleeping bag, you throw it away? They didn't stop existing.
Yeah.
They need, now they're going to come rob off our porches to survive."
Yeah. Yeah.
"So that policy is performative, it's cruel, and it's stupid."
Yeah.
And so, I, you know, the people there at the beginning of that meeting were angry. Mm-hmm. They didn't like the fact that they had so many visible signs of poverty in their neighborhoods. You know, there's health issues, things like that. They were concerned. But I spoke, Donnie Green spoke, and we turned that crowd around. They started asking Nicole George, who was really representing the city, Phil was just kind of moderating, "What do you do to break that cycle? Where do they go when you send them out of the camps? What do we do to, you know, try to, like, break that cycle?" And she had no good answers because we don't do anything.
Yeah.
So I left that meeting. I felt great. I said, "I don't need to run. Civic process works. We changed minds tonight." And then the next day, WDRB reported that Phil was spending his discretionary budget on police overtime, partially to clear camps.
Oh,
and I said, "You know what? I think I'm going
to
look into it.
Time to run." My guest here on Sustainability Now is running for Metro Council in District 6 on the Democratic ticket. His name is J.P. Lininger. You can learn more about him at jporlouisville.com. We're in our last segment. I know we have so many important topics to cover. Let's talk about LG&E.
Let's talk about
this utility that is spending a lot of money trying to look like they're a good neighbor. This is a monopoly of a public utility, right? What is the solution for us? How do we democratize this situation?
Right. So a lot of people don't know this, so I want to be extremely clear with your listeners. LG&E is not owned by a governmental agency. It's not owned by the city. It's not owned by the state.
It is for profit.
It is a for-profit corporation. It's owned by a company that's headquartered in Pennsylvania, traded on Wall Street. Your utility bills pay for shareholder profits.
Mm-hmm.
LG&E says they are not going to get off of coal until 2067, which is way, way too late.
Things will be great by then.
Right. So we need to take control of LG&E, democratize it, make it a public utility. How do we do that? This is one time that state law is on our side.
Hmm.
It is a state law that if our municipality says we want LG&E to become a public utility, they have to sell it to us. Infrastructure and all. No choice.
Really?
You go to Western Kentucky, because of this law, everything is a public utility. Cable TV is a public utility in Western Kentucky.
I had no idea.
Yes. The definition of what is a utility is extremely broad.
Wow.
The powers of this law are extremely powerful.
Huh.
We could leverage that. So ask yourself, why has no one ever mentioned this to me before when running for office? Well, I don't take any money from LG&E executives because this is an extremely important part of my platform that I will never compromise on. We have to take public control of LG&E. I'm not saying it happens overnight. I'm not saying it'll be easy. I'm not saying that they're not going to spend giant sums of money to prevent, to distort the public perception, to distort our communications with each other about what is possible. The fact of the matter, it is, and we need to get out there and talk to people about not only the need, the necessity of us making LG&E a public utility, but also the path to how we get there. It's not pie in the sky.
Hmm.
We're not making this up. We're ready day one to get this ball rolling, because I talk to the people in Louisville. I never talk to anyone who's like, No, I like the idea that when I pay an astronomical bill with LG&E, that I am paying for someone's yacht
and paying for yachts. Yeah. So what would that look like? Would Metro Louisville run the utility, or what does that usually look like, say, in Western Kentucky?
So what it usually looks like is you've got, a board,
okay,
maybe appointed by, state and or the city or a combination thereof. You know, the structures would be extremely up for grabs. That's something else we would have to fight for and be ready.
Yeah.
But
it might look like more like the water company, right?
It might look a little more like the water company. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They might set it up as a quasi-public institution. Okay. It depends on how we do it when we buy it. The city's going to have to issue bonds to make it happen. Mm-hmm. This is going to have to be a commitment from the city.
Yeah.
So I think it would be very important that the city, if we're laying the money out, stay in control. I think that it would be very important that this become a department of city government.
Mm. Well, and there's really no other way for the city to meet the goals for renewable energy that the council has mandated, right?
There are not.
I mean, LG&E is not going to do it. We could spend the rest of the time just talking about that. So I'm glad you got this on your platform, and thanks for educating me and our listeners about the possibilities there. That's actually very exciting. Another important piece of sustainability on your platform has to do with transportation. Mm-hmm. What is your vision for fixing our broken transportation system here in Louisville?
Well, a lot of it comes down to funding. We have a extremely underfunded public transportation system in Louisville. A lot of that is a legacy of racism.
Yeah.
You talk to a lot of people in Louisville from one side of town, and the bus isn't even on their radar as a mode of transit.
Yeah.
But it's less than it used to be, even, because we took away stops and routes in 2017 in the austerity budget. We never fully restored TARC. TARC is unreliable. TARC drivers will tell you that, they don't have the means to take care of the buses, make sure they're safe. We chronically have underfunded TARC when we should be expanding it. Not only because climate change is real, we need to, get cars off the road. The working class needs public transportation to get around, okay? Also, when we talk about downtown and revitalizing it, we are going to have to reorient our ideas of downtown towards residents, okay? And if you want young people to live downtown, guess what? Good news. They want to live downtown. You look at every other city in the country, young people live downtown. Why don't they do it here in Louisville? Because they want to live downtown and not have to use a car to get around.
Yeah.
And we can't offer that yet because we don't fund public transportation.
Yeah.
There are basic ideas for how to improve TARC that are not being listened to. The ATU, the union that runs TARC, would like TARC to become free at the point of service.
Absolutely.
Eliminate fares.
Absolutely.
They make so little money from the fares. Silly. They would have more funding from the federal government. It would more than make up for it because of the increase in ridership.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a no-brainer thing that we're just not doing because we've got these ideas of, you need to pay the $1.50, for whatever service to make sure that you're a stakeholder and all this other kind of NGO language. Just make it free. Make people use it. Make people see it as a public good.
Yeah.
So they want to buy in. So they want to fund it because they want to use a public good and they want to have a positive experience with their public good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not just another option. It is a public good and a public resource. I love the way you've put that. And I've heard the numbers. I can't remember them, but that TARC's budget is funded by the ridership, the fares, and it's so minuscule that it's laughable. And if we could just think of how much TARC could save and make the system work more quickly and efficiently, if you didn't have to mess with a fare every time you boarded, you wouldn't need any of that equipment. You wouldn't need any of that time on the road. Man, that is a great idea. But TARC's not the only solution for transportation, right? Mm-hmm. What are some of your other thoughts?
So right now, we have one block of protected bike lane in the entire city over there by Tyler Park. Congratulations, everyone. You can get up the hill without having to worry that you're about to get mowed down by a car.
Yep. And now another block in front of Headliners.
Yeah. Your listeners can't see me and my extremely long hair.
It's beautiful.
Thank you. I didn't used to wear my hair long. I've got a big scar here in the back of my head where I can't grow hair because I was hit by a car on 2nd Street in 2019. I was on my way to the Y to go work out after I took my kid to school. And this is an issue that's really important to me. We're getting ready to convert 2nd and 3rd Street to two-way. We're going to have some protected bike lane infrastructure there. It's good, not perfect. In my opinion, it needs to both ways completely connect U of L to downtown.
Yeah.
Because protected bike lanes are bike lanes that get used. You go to Chicago, people use the bike lanes to get around the city. We treat biking as a sort of like, you know, boutique issue, a hobby, you know, a sport. This is transit. This is how people get around in other places. Chicago has much worse weather than us, but much more utilized bike infrastructure. We can have that too, but you have to commit. If it's not protected bike lanes, and by that we mean you've got the lane, then you've got a parked car, then you've got a bike,
and
then you've got the bike
cars,
lane, then you've got the sidewalk.
Yeah.
And so if you don't have protected bike infrastructure that goes all the way up and down the route, people will not use it at the same rate. But we need to be thinking bigger than that. It's not just, again, you know, like, oh, these young students want to get downtown to see a U of L game and then ride their little bicycle back. We need protected bike lane infrastructure throughout the city, including to the West End.
That's
to and from the West End,
yep.
In through the West End.
Yeah.
Those people need and deserve protected bike lanes too.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, a lot of people will say, well, bikes are going away, scooters are taking over, but this same infrastructure would work for scooters too.
Yeah.
So the micromobility solutions are absolutely vital if we really want to encourage people to think about leaving the car at home and thinking about a different way of getting around. We're nearing the end of our time together. I haven't even asked you about public health and safety. Gosh, is there anything else you were really hoping to share your thoughts about before we close?
You know, I guess what I always want to talk to people about is that this is about building movement. You know, I tell people all the time, I'm not magic. I don't have a magic wand. I'm just one guy.
With that hair, come on.
Thank you. I'm just one guy.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Everything we've talked about today, if I were a traditional candidate, people should laugh at me. We're not going to accomplish those things with one guy going up to the Metro Council and saying, but really, guys, shouldn't we do the right thing?
Uh-huh.
It's not that, you know, we don't have these things. And I tell people all the time, that lit that I take around and I campaign on with my platform, I could take it anywhere in the urban core. I could campaign anywhere because people want these things. And if everyone agrees that we want them and we need them in the Highlands, in Newburgh, in Beachmont, in Russell, in Smoketown, if everybody agrees, why don't we have them yet? Is it that all of our politicians are hopelessly corrupt? Is it that no one has thought of these solutions before? You know, is it that no one has ever advocated for good things in Louisville?
Yeah.
No, that's not the problem. The problem is we haven't built the people power to achieve these things. But we're going to.
Yeah.
That's what this is about. I want to build movement and people power so we can go out and we can fight for these things. It's going to take a long time. I was at the 25 Years of Fairness retrospective at the Speed Cinema.
Yes.
And it was really powerful. People had pictures of, you know, throughout the decades of the campaign talking about, like, you know, we were here doing this and this was the direct action. And people were donating personal effects to the archives at U of L. It was great. But the thing that was most powerful to me was the fact that the Campaign for Fairness started in 1985. And we got fairness in 1999. And in fact, the roots of the fairness campaign went back even further to the Gay Liberation House on Belgravia in 1971.
Oh, wow.
And so it was decades of work, of organizing, of getting out and talking to people about the needs of Louisville, what we needed to change to make this a city that was for everyone. That's what it's going to take to make a city that's for everyone.
Yeah.
Is we're going to have to go out and organize and talk to people about this is what we have, this is what we could have, this is what we, this is something worth fighting for and building movement. I really believe that. If I didn't believe in movement, I wouldn't do this. This, like you said, I've got kids. This is a huge chunk of my day, every day that I am spending away from my family, away from my pursuits. You know, songs not written, books not written.
Yeah.
You know, these are, we have to sacrifice, you know, for public good here. But I'm willing to do that because I believe in the people of Louisville. I meet people every day who say, you know what? This is worth fighting for. This does matter. We can do this. And that keeps me going. That's why I get out of bed in the morning is I talk to these people every day who say, we can do it. Let's go do it. And that's what it's going to take. We're going to have to fight and build for a long time to get these things, but we can do it.
Yeah.
It just takes mass movement. It takes building that people power. It's the only way. People power is the only way to achieve these things. They're not going to give them to us.
Which, my friends, is the message of Earth Day. It started in 1970, and it was all about people power for protecting the planet. And I can't think of a better way for us to mark this occasion than the message you just shared, JP. So thank you so much for taking the time. Sit down with me here in the studio. JP Leninger, running for Metro Council District 6 in the Democratic primary that will be held on Tuesday, May 21st. You can learn more about him and his campaign at jpforlouisville.com. Forward Radio does not endorse any candidates for office, but we will be doing our best to get you conversations with all of the candidates here on the station in the coming weeks. So, JP, thanks so much for taking the time and for doing this important work.
Well, thank you for having me. Also, your listeners can find us on social media everywhere at JP for Lou.
Excellent. Stay tuned, everybody. Coming up in just a second, I've got your community action calendar. A bunch of things coming up this very week, this Earth Day week, that you can get engaged with to advance sustainability here in Louisville. So stay tuned, my friends.
While the sun shines bright on my whole Kentucky home, 'tis summer and the people are gay, and the corn tops rise while the meadows are in bloom. Them birds are making music all the day. Said, weep no more, my lady, oh, and weep no more today. And we'll sing one song for my old Kentucky home, for my old Kentucky home far away. Now the young folks roll on that little cop and flow, all merry, all happy and bright. By and by, hard times will come a knocking at the door. My old Kentucky home, good night. I said, weep no more, my lady, oh, and weep no more today. And we'll sing one song for my old Kentucky home.
And we are back here on Sustainability Now with me, Justin Mogg. Hope you've got your calendars out, your pencils sharpened, you're ready to take action for sustainability this week. So much going on just on Tuesday, April 23rd at 4 p.m. online. You can join U of L for the final sustainability roundtable of the year. This one focused on community gardens, finding common ground in food insecurity. Join the U of L Sustainability Council for our last spring sustainability roundtable on Tuesday at 4. We conclude with a presentation by the amazing Morgan Early, a graduating U of L Sustainability Master's student who will be presenting on community gardens. Join us for this comprehensive overview of community gardening, including the history of the movement, the benefits, the drawbacks, and the obstacles that these spaces face. This includes a case study of U of L's own garden commons, the unique qualities that help this garden thrive, and visions of potential garden expansion. No registration is necessary. You can just find the link to join us on Tuesday at 4 p.m. at louisville.edu/sustainability. Also on Tuesday in the evening at the Louisville Nature Center at 6 o'clock, it's a course on native gardening. Are you a beginning gardener that wants to learn more about native plantings? Well, Phyllis will give a presentation plus Q&A session about how to create a native garden. After the presentation, she will take you on an optional tour of her private native garden down the street from the Louisville Nature Center. I've toured it myself, and I can highly recommend Phyllis's native garden. It is really a wonderful experience. So learn more and get your tickets at louisvillenaturecenter.org. It's coming up this Tuesday at 6 p.m. Also Tuesday at 7 p.m., It's the global rise of fascism, with the Louisville Democratic Socialists Association hosting Mariana Riscalia, a member of the National Executive Committee of Brazil's Socialism and Liberty Party, for a talk on the rise of the global far right, focusing on Brazil's Bolsonaro government. That's Tuesday, the 23rd at 7 p.m. at 900 South Shelby Street. On Tuesday at 7 p.m., the global rise of fascism. Also, Tuesday, April 23rd is your deadline to register for the Kentucky Student Environmental Coalition's Reset Statewide meeting that's going to be taking place May 3rd to 5th at Sisters of Loretto. For those that want to be part of the reshaping of this new KSEC, we'll be having a statewide meeting May 3rd to 5th. It will also be available online. If you can't attend but want to be heard, there's also a short interest form that you can fill out instead. Reshaping of KSEC is a call to action for all folks who care about making the Kentucky Student Environmental Coalition an effective home for young organizers in Kentucky. And if you want to learn more and if you want to register, it's at bit.ly/KSEC reset_info. bit.ly/KSEC reset_info. Now, coming up Wednesday, April 24th, Trees Louisville is looking for volunteers to help out this week. If you're interested in helping out, you can just email morgan@treeslouisville.org, and they need help on both Wednesday and Friday. So on Wednesday the 24th, they're going to be out at Sojourn Church, Carlisle, from 1:30 to 4 p.m., planting 30 new trees with Racing Louisville. How cool is that? And then on Friday, April 26th, they need help out at Fern Creek High School from 10 a.m. to 12:30 p.m., planting 18 new trees out there at Fern Creek High. Again, if you're interested, email morgan@treeslouisville.org. Also, coming up this week, Thursday, April 25th, it's the last Thursday of the month, and that means it's time for the next Beyond Plastics Louisville meeting at 7 p.m. online. They meet the last Thursday of each month to continue collaborating on action to reduce plastic pollution. This month, the special guest will be Stacy Roof, president of the Kentucky Restaurant Association, going to be telling us about the role of the Restaurant Association and suggest some ways that we can effectively encourage local restaurants to reduce waste by reducing single-use plastics. Beyond Plastics Louisville, of course, is part of the national grassroots movement to raise awareness about plastic pollution and promote alternatives to single-use plastics. After decades spent promoting recycling, we know that less than 9% of all plastic produced has been recycled, and we cannot recycle our way out of the plastic problem. Beyond Plastic seeks and supports truly sustainable solutions. You can learn more and find the link to register for the 7 p.m. Thursday online meeting at facebook.com/groups/BeyondPlasticsLOUKY. Now, coming up Saturday, April 27th at the Louisville Nature Center at 10 a.m. to noon, it's a City Nature Challenge. It's time for another Community Science Challenge. From April 26th to 29th, the City Nature Challenge is taking place around the world during the same four-day period. And on this hike on Saturday at 10 a.m., Luke will teach you about the biodiversity of Beargrass Creek State Nature Preserve. You'll be encouraged to take photos of plants, animals, fungi, and other organisms and document your findings on iNaturalist. It's a bio blitz, so let's have some fun. You can learn more at louisvillenaturecenter.org. It's this Saturday, 10 a.m. at the Nature Center. Now, on Sunday, April 28th, it's an Earth Month hair jam to benefit Kentucky Waterways Alliance and the Hoosier Environmental Council, taking place at the Depot at NOCO in Jeffersonville, Indiana. Doors open at 6 p.m. on Sunday. Get ready to celebrate sustainability in style. Join us for a night of eco-friendly hair demonstrations, music, and community vibes. Show off your best earth-inspired hairstyle. I love it. And connect with like-minded individuals who care about our planet. Let's jam together for a greener future. The event will feature DJs, food trucks, local vendors, a cash bar, raffle, and live graffiti art. It is for anyone over 18. Proceeds benefit Kentucky Waterways Alliance and the Hoosier Environmental Council. You can get your tickets now at kwalliance.org. Again, it's Thursday. It's coming up Sunday, April 28th, 6 p.m. at the Depot in Jeffersonville. A few other things of note to take care of this week. First of all, did you know that there is a Kentucky statewide rail plan? I didn't know either, but I now do, and I'm spreading the word. Everyone needs to take the public survey about the Kentucky statewide rail plan. The Kentucky Transportation Cabinet is currently gathering public opinion on both passenger and freight rail service in Kentucky. KYTC will include the feedback gathered in the rail plan, and all comments collected will be forwarded to the proper facilitator for changes to Amtrak and freight rail companies. The goal of the survey is to gather information within the existing rail service areas and provide additional insight for the potential future of rail within the state of Kentucky, particularly here in the Louisville area. Now, in this survey, you'll have the opportunity to comment on the fact that the Federal Railroad Administration and Amtrak are currently conducting a long-distance daily service study to evaluate the restoration of daily long-distance intercity rail passenger service and the potential for new Amtrak long-distance routes. There are two potential new routes through Louisville, Detroit to New Orleans, and Chicago to Miami. My friends, if you've ever wanted to be able to step on a train to get somewhere here in Louisville, you need to express your opinion in this public survey about the Kentucky statewide rail plan. It will ultimately create a long-term vision for long-distance passenger rail service and identify capital projects and funding needed to implement that vision. This study is set to conclude this spring, so learn more and express your support for the most efficient and sustainable form of intercity travel and freight at kyrailplan.com. kyrailplan.com. Another thing to let you know about, the Louisville Sustainability Fund from the Louisville Sustainability Council offers grants to support innovative entrepreneurial projects and programs to plan for the impact of climate change on our most vulnerable citizens while supporting community equity and resilience. Recipients will receive between $250 and $2,500 towards their project and will have access to Louisville Sustainability Council events, programs, mentors, and the opportunity to partner with LSC initiatives. So the submission window is going to close at the end of May, May 31st, with notification of award on July 1st. You can learn more about it at LouisvilleSustainabilityCouncil.org. The other thing to let you know, Bike Louisville and the Office of Planning are partnering with Alta Planning and Design to develop a bikeway implementation plan for Louisville. This study will set the agenda for bike infrastructure improvements for the near future by prioritizing areas of existing bike network that would benefit most from quick build projects. They're soliciting public input on the existing bike network and where improvements to that network are most needed. You're encouraged to take the Bikeway Implementation Plan survey to provide your feedback on Louisville's existing network and help us set priorities. And for more specific recommendations, you can use the input map to draw and pinpoint problem areas around the city. It's actually a lot of fun. You can participate through May 8th. So find the links to participate at louisvilleky.gov/government/bike-Louisville. It's the Bike Louisville page at louisvilleky.gov. We'll find the link to participate in this important survey and input map about the bikeway implementation plan for our city. And that's all the time we have for today here on Sustainability Now. I want to thank you so, so much for tuning in, and I look forward to being back in your ears again in 1 week's time, my friends. Be well. Let the love around.